Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467369.
This is your Bomb Wednesday service. I am Naima Cochran, your senior pastor. And with me, I have, as always, Karin. Do you want to say hello to the people?
Hello, everyone. Here is your director of health ministry.
My director of health ministry. And we have family.
Look at you.
Go ahead.
Dealing, as always, with your haters and reminding you all, as always, stop giving your wife, that white man, your money.
And also his black wife.
And his black wife. The only black person in the house.
She was in your inboxes last week, giving you, asking for donations.
Oh, no. I thought she hit Karin up, like, directly. I was about to say, she heard you was chatting and it came at you. I was about to say, what?
They don't want this smoke. They ain't no better. They're not going to do that.
They also, ever address anything privately. They do everything publicly. But Ray King is offering customized private schooling for your youngins because the Kings have homeschooled all their children. I did not look at what the prices were, but there's money. Obviously, there's money attached. But yeah, I mean,
get your money.
Scam alert.
I would just not suggest you give any money to anybody with the last name King. That's all I'm gonna say. But we also have we have Family Wars. You heard another voice in the background. We're watching the video this week, right? You heard we had Trey with us last week. This week we have Waz. Hey, Waz.
What's going on, y'all, man? Just happy to be back. I love the Sean King discourse as always. Last week I had an epiphany and I said, yo, Mike Tirico need to sit down with Sean King on camera. Because Mike Tirico is a black guy who claims to be white.
And we have
yes.
The possible white. Like, it would be like Inception.
No, the funny thing is that, like, when I wrote my Sage Steele column, I wrote a Sage Steele column a couple weeks back. ESPN's Candace Owens. But people don't know that, like, Mike Tirico has been on my list also. Because he has one more strike to act like he ain't black, and I'm gonna get him too. Because I don't have any patience. First it was Tiger, then it was Sage. Now it's him. I just don't have patience for niggas who acting like they ain't niggas. Because these white people in don't treat you like you a nigga. Like, yep, no, we not. I don't have any patience for us anymore.
We don't have time for that in 2020. But Waz, we happen to catch you in New York. How's it feel to be home?
It's incredible. I haven't been home since January, which is, this will be the longest time I've ever spent outside of New York.
Wow.
And so to come back was just dope. And, you know, catching up with family and friends and stuff is the best. I was happened to be downtown today, went to Pier 17, South Street Seaport, checked out their little socially distanced, the Heineken Lounge thing upstairs on the roof.
Oh, how is it? I think I'm supposed to be going there this weekend.
It's dope. It's really nice. Like, super nice up there. And then, but you know, my first garbage truck passed me, and I got a whiff of that, and I'm like, okay, I'm back home for real.
But you were also like, this is why I left?
No, well, I would never say that, but I'm okay. Like, yeah, you don't get a lot of this in Encino. But you know, it was great. Now I just need to see a pizza rat.
Listen, those pizza rats have grown over the quarantine. Because while they couldn't get any food, they were cannibalizing each other. So that pizza rat might look more like a calzone rat. Like, that joint's gonna be like,
did you say a calzone? A Stromboli rat?
A Stromboli rat.
Oh my goodness.
That's a marsupial if it's going to be that big.
That's how they look. I saw there was some clip going around of some rat getting literally drugged under a partition down in the subway by another rat. And then that rat stuck his nose out. And that joint was like Splinter from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It was so big. And I was like,
That probably was like the rat Sean King. And everybody was just like jumping. That's probably what it was.
I was like, I'm not taking the subway until 2021. This is the longest I've ever gone without taking a train. Like, I wouldn't even know how to act down there right now. I'd probably be bewildered. Well, anyway, Waz, it's good to have you. Thank you for being here. This show this week, like, it's tricky for me because there was a sufficient amount of like foolishness that and light stuff that Karin and I wanted to talk about. And then that all changed like yesterday and Sunday. So we also have a couple like heavy things that we really need to focus on. Heavy things we need to focus on. But I do want to at least acknowledge one of the really kind of light and foolish things. Which, unfortunately, it shouldn't be light and foolish because it has to do with one of God's shepherds. Pastor John Gray rose to fame as an associate minister as part of Joel Osteen's ministry.
Oh, he's from the Osteen family tree.
He's from the Osteen family. Mm. And
That's not the proper way to describe John Gray. Let's just say what he is.
I gotta give people some background. And then for a lot of people, they came to know him because he and his family had a reality show on OWN, the Book of Gray or the Book of John Gray or something. And he's like an author and fake ass relationship coach and all this other stuff. So
And he wears Yeezys. I've seen, like, so when you guys sent this over to me, I was like,
creature who wears designer clothes because.
But that's not how John Gray became John Gray. John Gray became John Gray because he was the fat, jolly black dude that made the white people at the big white church feel cool. That's how John Gray got on.
Okay, fair. Okay, well, we'll let that rise. We'll submit that as well, right? So the thing about John, though, was that it might have only been, was it last year? Was it the beginning of last year?
Yep.
It was just last year. A couple of things happened in succession. The first thing that happened was, and I was already looking at John Gray sideways because every time I would see John Gray speak, minister or pastor would be like the last thing that he was talking about. Like he'd be talking about everything else, right? Being an author first, you know, being a public figure first, like ministry would be last. And when you're an associate minister, that's cool. When you're an associate minister, ministry is a part-time job. When you become a senior pastor, you're pastor first, you're everything else second, right? Like that's who you are. You're supposed to hide yourself behind the cross. Like that's it. You have souls in your hands. It's your charge. So once he became a senior pastor of a church in Greenville, South Carolina, and I felt like he was throwing some bullshit. Like he would do Instagram videos being like, I'm not a pastor today. Today I'm just a husband or something like that. And then he came under fire for buying his wife a Lamborghini. And then we found out that the reason he bought his wife a Lamborghini was because this nigga got caught cheating and sloppy cheating because there were all kinds of voicemail messages and whatnot that got leaked out to blogs. There are Christian gossip blogs, which is beautiful. Screenshots, whatever. So, you know, him and his wife do the whole media tour.
Wait. You're forgetting the part, the screenshot about how the side piece was giving him the WAP so good he was speaking in tongues. Remember?
Oh, right. I definitely deliberately blocked some details.
You got to catch these jokes.
No, because it was too graphic. It was a lot. But they did a whole media tour about how, like, it was just an emotional affair and not a real affair. And then
it was the devil, remember?
It was the devil. Well, she said it was the devil. It was the devil. And then on New Year's Eve, he sat up in the Potter's House, which is T.D. Jakes church, and, like, fell out. And he was battling demons, and he wanted to take his life. And everybody's covering and praying over him, whatever. Now, it happened again. So now we got
screens. But this time, we have videos.
We have videos. So here's the thing. Last time you got busted on voicemail, and your solution was, I'm going to start sending videos? Dog, like, he's so messy. He's so bad at this. We got videos of him complaining that his wife don't cook, but also of him offering to cook for the chick. Him asking for
side
bikini pictures. Yeah, asking what side dish you want. Asking for bikini pictures, him telling her to get her best two-piece and meet him at the Clearport so they can go to Cabo.
He's showing the PJ.
Yeah, he's showing the PJ in the background. We have screen caps of him offering to send her Apple Pay, $200 via Apple Pay if she shows him her bra size. She said something about him liking big areola. Again, something else I really didn't need to know about John Gray.
Also, he had his child
in the car,
video confirming that his son eats DiGiorno pizza every day because he was complaining that his wife doesn't cook enough.
Wow.
So his son has to eat DiGiorno every day.
But then again, like I said, but in the very next video, he calling himself Chef John Gray. So like, math ain't math, and you can't cook for yourself, my dude. You can only cook for the side pieces. But
I want to ask you guys, because, you know, as the first generation Haitian American, I'm not as tapped into the sort of black mega church culture as you guys might be, because
we got you.
Whatever you need to know, we got you.
Right. So in the hierarchy of that culture in that lane, what would you say John Gray is? Like, is he like the Ariana Grande?
He's not even one of the top black mega church, because John Gray came up under the white folk.
He came under the white
folk. Oh, so he don't even lane. He's in a whole different lane.
But you know, but the thing is,
he like Hootie from Hootie and the Blowfish.
what? There you go.
The reality show gave him credit, out gave him some clout. I would say he's maybe like a somebody who has only risen to stardom. Somebody who's only like a few albums deep, right? But like might be a little bit inconsistent. So I'll think a little bit about who that is. So he's definitely not like a superstar. He's not like he's not like a TD Jakes.
He's not Creflo Dollar.
He's not Creflo. He's not nowhere near that. And the thing is that he's only had his own church and his own ministry for a little over a year now. It happened right when this last cheating scandal broke. So he's still really a baby pastor. Even though he's been in ministry his whole life, starting as a youth minister, he hasn't had his own church for that long. And Greenville is a small town, so I really hope. I think the chick was in Houston, where he still does also keep a place, because that's where Joel is located, because he's still affiliated with Lakewood as well. Yeah. So I just, my thought with John has always been, like, he has said that he was, I want to say, a virgin until he got married, so like well into his 20s. So you couldn't get.
Always a problem.
Is always a problem. So you couldn't get ass, and or you were taught that it was bad to get ass as you were growing up. Now you got a little bit of money. Right. Now you got some money.
Don't know how to act.
You can trick a little bit. And you don't know how to act, because that's the only way these chicks are fucking with him, is because he's tricking, but or offering to. Because that's why the last girl exposed him. He was supposed to pay some bills and didn't.
And Waz, to give you an example, since your family's from the islands, he ain't even hit a Miles Monroe level yet, if you remember that name, when Miles Monroe had his run in the 90s.
He's getting started out now. And another thing I wanted to ask you, how often is it common for the people in these circles, you know, these celebrity preacher types, to get caught with infidelity stuff? Quite a common theme.
Quite often.
Okay.
from the days of Jim and Tammy Faye, it's more common than it should be. The problem is that when you're a pastor of a mega church, people tend to, actually, this is a problem. And I'm not even just going to say it's the black church. It's a church problem, period. People start to put the pastor ahead of the church. So you forget that you're really there for the pastor to guide you. When you start looking at the pastor, you start worshiping the pastor instead of actually worshiping Jesus and God, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And people are very willing to forgive the sins of a church pastor. Like it takes so much for a pastor to truly be scandalized and outed from a church. And like I said, especially with John, He's had like the Oprah co-sign because he had the OWN show, which skipped him ahead of a lot of other pastors because he had that visibility. So the place where he has his church now, Greenville, South Carolina, I actually grew up there. And I was saying on socials, I was like, I know one on Facebook, because that's where all the people I went to school were. I was like, I know one of y'all go to his church, and nobody answered. Turns out my best friend from high school goes to his church. And I didn't find out till the weekend of her wedding. But she was like, I think they're, you know, aspirational. And I think, like, you know, he brings a good word, but I also can totally see her going in for that prosperity preaching shit. I just think, John, you got too much dip on your chip. I just really need you to just
cool out for a little bit.
Yeah. Like, cool, go out. Meditation retreat, seek God's voice, because
that's not going to fix the problem.
No.
It's not going to fix the problem.
But whatever it is, he needs to step away from the pulpit.
The problem is that he has a pussy problem.
He put the pussy before the pulpit. He needs it. Like, your man has the nerve.
Wow, that is a word.
He preached on adultery on Sunday. He's delusional. Like, the boldness of that. For all of that to break this weekend, and you preached on adultery on Sunday? Like, are you kidding me?
And the only one of these that I can remember that actually, like, dealt with some true backlash with this was Word of Faith. I think the daddy named Keith Butler in Detroit, and all the satellite churches he had across the country. And when that whole scandal with him went down, like, his son broke out on his own and started his own church. So I remember going to his son's church in Atlanta, the church they had down there. And that was a huge scandal, being back home and all the satellite churches they had. But usually, like Naima said, like, they apologize, they repent, they cry, everyone feels bad, and then they're right back at it. And the problem, what I was saying, like the problem him not sitting down is because usually with black pastors, there are either one or two types. They're either, and they're the type of pastors that I like, or one like this, ones that used to be ancient and they got their life turned around so they can talk to you with like a real life perspective because they've been there, they've done it, they understand it. Or you get the goody goodies that blow up and have never lived life. So when all this
fame, we don't like the goody goodies.
And it comes at them, they don't know how to handle mess it. Up. Because you got to understand the charisma and power that comes from being a black pastor. It has nothing to do with your physique or how you look. It's the power that you have in that pulpit and the way that you can touch people in an emotional way. That opens legs. And if you ain't used to WAP, woo boy, this is not the profession for you.
If you ain't used to attention, period. So I do. We have a lot more to cover, so I don't want to spend too much time on John, but I just had to acknowledge, like, my dude, just have a little talk with Jesus. Tell him all about your trouble. Step out of the pulpit. And you too, Aventura. What's her name, Aventura?
Who knows?
Homegirls love me like I'm Aventura. Yeah, so you too, Aventura, sis. It's not, this ain't on you, but your husband is community penis, and you need to stop trying to cover that man because he ain't covering you. That's that word. Stop covering people who ain't covering you.
It don't sound like nobody's covering nobody in that house.
I skipped ahead. So before we get into the meat of things, let me take a pause for the cause and do a little housekeeping real quick. I do want to remind you, as I do every week, that in addition to this show, Count the Dings has a wide array of programming for you, whatever your tastes may be. So if you want to rock with the Count the Dings feed, you have the Dad Pod on Mondays, you have Cinephobe on Wednesdays, and you have the Mailbag on Fridays. And if you want to rock with the Black Opinions Matter motherfucker feed, which is this, you have the OG show on Tuesdays, you have this show, me, Karin, hi, on Wednesdays. On Thursdays, you have Wise and Woke Bros, and you also have Trey with Growing Up the Same. And then if none of that suits you or you still want more after that, you can also subscribe to our Patreon for exclusive content. That is patreon.com, Count the Dings. All right, so now.
Wait. You're not going to skip over all these voice inflections you just did because you ain't never did the promos like that.
It's your broadcast style.
I
never do them the same way twice. I absolutely have.
She getting her sage steel on, that's all.
I don't know what's in your cup, Karin, but
it's cognac for Kamala. Every episode.
We drinking brown till November 3rd.
Yeah. Listen, we gonna need it.
Hey, you need to get you some rum, some Ray and Nephew. You know she's Jamaican, so
the Ray and
drink some rum punch.
We drink cognac.
Hey man, they're gonna be eating ackee and saltfish in the White House, man. That's crazy.
Wise got us talk about drinking Ray and Nephew. We will not be able to finish this show. It'll be like 15 and then we'll just be here laughing and shit. So I do want to give a shout out to the GOP for the wackest convention.
Oh my God.
Real. The GOP convention is surreal. But anyway, shout out if you need to be entertained but also horrified.
No, don't give them white people.
Don't do it. And I actually, literally, maybe an hour before I got on with you guys, I watched Tim Scott Blackass go up there and embarrass himself. It's distressing.
Parading of black people.
No, it's a lot of house niggery. Let's just be honest.
House niggery for sure.
It's a lot of lemonade being served.
A lot of house niggery. But you do. You need to know what the opposition is up to. But they're also very scary. It's an alternate universe. All right. So let's get into shit. Unfortunately, the media tonight is about loss of black lives or the endangered black lives. Thing I'm happy to say is this one isn't about a loss of a black life, but it was close. So we all woke up yesterday to thinking that yet another black man had been killed at the hands of police. Jacob Blake, a 29-year-old in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was apparently breaking up a fight between two women. I'm not sure how he knew them or how he got involved. And when the police finally came to actually handle the situation, he was like, cool, then I'm out. He had his kids in the car. They follow him to the car, and somehow something escalates between him and one of the officers. He gets shot 7 times in the back. Fortunately, he did survive surgery. He is in stable condition, although he is paralyzed from the waist down, possibly permanently. Doctors don't know yet, although they think it's likely. And one of the things that was the most disturbing, and we talk about this often, is there was video footage, but the way people carelessly just post the shit. Like, I saw somebody who, a white man who, I think he's a journalist, but he definitely considers himself like a liberal and an ally, who posted the clip simply with the hashtag Black Lives Matter. No context, no trigger warning, no nothing. And as always, as soon as I saw that there was about to be some shit between between cops and a black person, I didn't watch it. I can't watch death.
I'm the same.
You know? And I just, like, I really don't understand how people don't understand that that shit, posting that shit, is not allyship. That's spectacle. You know, for us to, like, there's a meme going around right now that says watching black people die on video is not normal. It's not normal. It's not healthy. It shouldn't be. Like, you can talk about it, but you can use stills, you can use clips, you can use pictures. You don't have to show this whole video of us watching black people die over and over again. But
I have a completely different viewpoint on it.
Which is?
However, when black people say they can't watch it, I'm fine with that. But I watch every single
one. People need to bear witness.
I watch every single one. And if I had it my way, all of us could. But I understand that some black people can't. Ain't black, because black people got the right to say no. Right. I watch every single one because I never want there to be a millisecond where I actually forget how police and white people think about us.
Right.
I don't want there to be a millisecond. I want white people to watch everyone. And I want black people to watch everyone so they never think that we have gotten to a level where shit has gotten better. Because every time we make progress, we take our foot off the brake just a little bit. And it's human nature. It's feeling good. Everything's going well. We had 8 years of the best president this country has ever seen. But people also forget that during those 8 years, Trayvon Martin happened. Mike Brown happened because we took a little bit of pressure off the brake, which we were allowed to do because we finally got to exhale a little bit and celebrate these black people being in the White House. And it was great. But during those 8 years while we were celebrating, that other side, they was having meetings and they was getting their shit together.
Oh, absolutely.
Stuff started happening. And I'm like, look, I don't want this to ever happen again if we ever get a person of color or a woman in the White House to celebrate a little too much that we take our eyes off the prize.
But Carl,
and I want us to always, I get it. I want us to know.
I disagree about us taking our eyes off the prize because I remember.
Not all of us, some of us did.
No, but even some of us, like, it's not, people escalated the bullshit, but it's not like it ever stopped. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like it ever stopped. We just now have more access to videos going wide and going viral. So I don't even, it's true that there may be some people, and that may actually be more white people than us, who want to believe we're in a quote-unquote post-racial society. I don't think black people have ever forgotten. It's just sometimes we need to look away for our own sanity in order just to be able to function, right? Like, if I remember how thankful I was when, during Ferguson, I worked in a space for a short time where I did not feel like I could properly process what was going on. And that was impossible, right? But I remember during the election being so thankful that I didn't have to put on any fronts around my employees after Trump won about just how horrified and disgusted. And not all of us have that luxury. So there is a part of you that kind of has to decide, I'm going to shut it off. But I will say that I watched Jacob Blake's sister speak today. His family is a family of community, like, involvement activists. And I hate the saying, like, they got the wrong family, but, like, they got the wrong family. Like, they look like they were ready for
whatever.
Whatever. I don't know. Why? Do you have anything that you want to add?
I mean, it's nothing to say, you know. It's horrifying. It's terrible. Like you, it's hard for me to watch the cops act the way they do, you know, without getting overly emotional about it. I just do. I get emotional, and so I try to avoid it when I can, you know. How is it supposed to stop when these guys never face any consequences? And that's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, they're not incentivized to do anything else. They're incentivized to take the most extreme action because there's no recourse. Like, you as a victim have no recourse. Your family has no recourse. You might be able to sue the city and get some bread, which is, you know, I guess
it's supposed to be, and they have money set aside.
Of course.
For just that purpose.
Of course.
The cops' pensions. I think that's one thing that people don't realize because people are always like, they should sue the cops. Even if you sue the cops, you don't actually touch anything of theirs. Their pensions, like, by law, their pensions cannot be in play for lawsuits. If that was different, I think we would see different behavior.
But yeah, but shoot, man, and I'm somebody, especially when it comes to police unions, I'm a pro-union person. But 99% of unions don't function in the way that the police unions do, don't have as much power, as much sway, as much say-so as the police union. But, you know, I'm at a point where it's like, yeah, you kill somebody in the line of duty for no reason. Man, your pension might should be on the line, bro.
Should be.
You know, like, even if they're saying, all right, we can't even hold you criminally accountable, at least something. Yeah. You should have to go eat, find another way to eat. After you kill somebody in the line of duty, you know, I don't know.
It's disheartening. And that is the problem, is that the police union is the biggest. And I also am pro union, but the police union is the mob. Yep. They are the biggest obstacle to police reform. But I do think that, like I said, something about Jacob Blake surviving, right? I can't remember the last time we had a situation like this where that happened, especially shot 7 times in the back. Something about Jacob Blake surviving feels like this one's going to be different. And there's already uprisings in Kenosha. We'll see if it spreads. And I do also think that, you know, all the people who were in the protests and in the fight when we were still on shutdown and they didn't have other things to distract them, have obviously gotten distracted, you know, but the fight's not over. But we'll see how this continues to unfold
under the next few weeks. Every time this happens, we say we feel like this is going to be different. I vividly remember.
I've never said
I'm not saying you, but I'm saying I vividly remember Rodney King was supposed to change things.
Because it was on video.
DA says that all the time. My partner at The Athletic for the podcast we do, Hoops Adjacent, David Aldridge, the Hall of Famer, and he says Rodney King specifically all the time. He's like,
every time.
I remember. We got these motherfuckers on tape. It's over.
Yeah.
This is going to be the one that changes it. And
nope.
That was not the case.
Nope. Well, also, that was also an era where, you know, we're still there. The America is such a pro-cowboy, pro-hero, because this is all connected. Pro-cowboy, pro-hero, pro-military, pro-police, pro-military in theory, pro-police country, and anti, like, basically we're a country that believes that, you know, the law, like all of those things are mashed together. Like, everybody grew up watching country westerns, and you literally, like, you, there's an association between the cowboys, anybody who can shoot a gun. Like, America loves anybody who can shoot a gun, right? Not even people who can fight, somebody who can shoot a gun. Like, that's the American dream. But we're conditioned to believe that policemen, we've become conditioned to believe that policemen don't enforce the law, but that they literally are the law. Like, we call them the law. We'd be like, oh, somebody called the law. Like, we call them the law. But the police themselves are not the law, nor are they supposed to be above the law. But they, I think they themselves believe that, right? So, I mean, I don't know how we changed that, because that's so deeply ingrained into this country. And the militarization of police just further makes brown people and black people somebody they look at as insurgents, because they're not looking at it as service. They're looking at it as their regulators, which is also not necessarily what police is supposed to be.
To answer that question, like, you can't change it. And even if you do change it, you have to give it hundreds and hundreds of years for it to balance out. Because what people don't realize is that police started as a group of people to catch runaway slaves.
Right.
Also,
it's an evolution of slave catchers.
And what people don't realize are what cowboys. Cowboys are called cowboys because the first cowboys were actually black. Think about it, people. They're called cowboys.
Right.
They called us boys, so that's what they called the black people on the horses.
Yeah.
That was the term. And then it became something else, and we just start referring to white dudes and Wranglers with big hats as cowboys. No, that's what the black people were. But over time and over history, people don't know that, and things got changed. And it's like, oh, no, it stands for this, or it's because of that, when it's like, no. For the last 401 years since black people have been on this continent, that means if my math is correct, we got to give it another 401 just for it to equal out. Which is sad, but also frustrating in basic math, which is the problem.
Well, the idea of us putting things in place that aren't going to be seen until generations later is something that we don't do well with as a concept. And that's also part of the problem with voting apathy is, like, if I'm not going to see the change right now, if I'm not going to see it on November 10th, right, then what's the point? So that's something, we have to have a voting conversation.
I mean we're the country that laughed at Al Gore for talking about climate change.
Correct.
And look at our dumb asses now.
Correct. We've been talking about the ozone layer since I was in elementary school, and people don't even mention the ozone layer anymore because that bitch is gone. Now we got melted polar caps.
I remember Al Gore getting laughed off the stage.
Yeah.
And now everyone's just like, damn. Maybe we should have put some regulations in place because it doesn't snow anymore on Christmas.
All right. So I want to move on to the topic that I think is probably going to take us the rest of the show. Oh, definitely is going to take us the rest of the show because we're rolling. But first, justice for Jacob Blake. Please Google the hashtag. Take a look at how inform yourself of the situation if you aren't familiar with it yet. Please don't do anything that Sean King tells you to do. But Google the hashtag, find other people who are talking about it. My guess is that since Crump is involved, like, we might see Lee Merritt sneak up in there somewhere. I'm watching for that. But I get the feeling like this family is not, like, they don't actually need a whole lot of directive. Like, his grandfather was a pastor and a community organizer. His uncle's a community organizer. Like, they gonna hold this down. But Justice for Jacob Blake, the steps to take, who to call, what to do. You can find that by Googling the hashtag. All right. So week before last, HBO premiered a documentary called Storm in Brooklyn that is about the 1989 murder of Yusef Hawkins. And just to try to quickly paint the scene here, 1989 in New York is the year of the Central Park jogger case and the exonerated and if you guys didn't know, it's not proper to refer to them as the Central Park Five anymore. They are the exonerated five. The Central Park jogger case and the exonerated five is the summer that Do the Right Thing came out and Yusef Hawkins was killed 2 months later. It was the height of racial tension and unrest in New York City, and it's a year that still, like, if you were here, it still reverberates in the city now with all the gentrification, with all the money, with all everything. Like, it's really, that year is underlying in, I would say, in so much that happens here that has to do with racial relations and the relationship between cops and brown and black people and white and brown and black people in the city. So Yusef was a 16-year-old.
And also, crack was still around. So
crack was still around. It was also still a crack era. So Yusuf was a 16-year-old black boy from East New York. He was going to buy a used car in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, which, you know, I think if you're not from New York, your idea of Brooklyn might be that if you're black and you're not from New York, your idea of Brooklyn is that it's black. But there have also always been areas of Brooklyn that are largely Jewish, largely Italian. And at this time, it was very segregated. It was very, very, very segregated. And in Yusuf's neighborhood in East New York, you almost never saw any white people unless it was police or somebody trying to cop. And in Bensonhurst, they really didn't take kindly to black folks. So you guys can obviously watch the doc because it's on HBO On Demand. But basically, tensions were high in the neighborhood with the young members of the neighborhood because one of the girls from the neighborhood was dating a black boy. And they figured when they saw Yusuf and his boys that he was that guy. So a mob formed of news reports will say all white guys, but there was one black boy in there. There was one black boy in that mob.
There's always one.
There's always a Jason Whitlock around.
Always one. So there was one black boy in that mob. A mob formed. They had baseball bats. They fucked him and his friends up. And Yusuf ended up getting shot and killed. And at the time in New York, so now imagine this. So imagine like a literal lynch mob. It was all over.
They literally lynched the guy.
Yeah, a literal lynch mob. And this is all teenagers. It's all over the news. The NYPD wouldn't even call it a race-related crime, which is crazy. And unlike the exonerated five, there were eight kids who eventually got arrested. They were not splashed all over the news like everybody else. As a matter of fact, because it was a heavy, one of them, literally the one who ended up, Fama, who ended up getting convicted for the shooter, immediately he said that night, like he left town and like went upstate or something like that. So like they were hiding people, the neighborhood, nobody would talk. And what happened?
Donald Trump went taking out whole page ads and newspapers.
Of course not.
So the neighborhood was closing ranks. Nobody knew nothing. Nobody was saying nothing. So Al Sharpton and a whole bunch of black people started marching their ass through Bensonhurst every day. And when they started fucking the money up, Sammy the Bull Gravano was like, who shot him? Go get him. Turn him in. Because now you fucking with my money. So this doc comes out. And I just, again, like I said, this isn't just a black teenager got killed. This was like, Yusuf represents like a whole era of racial tension in New York, like I said. And like everything that happened here, it was part of, not that Al Sharpton wasn't already known, but this was part of like Al Sharpton's ascent to where he is now. It drove Dinkins winning as the first black mayor of New York later that year. It just, again, like I said, it carried on. And if you were a black or Latino person of age in the city at that time and of age, I mean like a teenager old enough to remember and have processed it, that still stays with you. So the doc comes out and there's police footage of one of the kids being interviewed and then his side profile shot at him towards the end. And the guy's name is Pascal Raucci. And it comes out that Pascal Raucci is a radio personality here at New York's Hot 97, which is not only just New York's hip hop station, but like one of the most well-known hip hop stations in the country. That he is not a radio personality. He's a radio producer, but he was kind of forward facing, named Patty Duke. And although Patty was not convicted of manslaughter, he was apparently towards the back of the pack. And he was charged with lesser charges, menacing, unlawful imprisonment, inciting a riot, something else. All of those got dismissed. He ended up getting probation and community service just for having the bat for a weapons charge. But he started it hot 5 years after the murder, 3 years after the trial, 3.5 years after the trial, just as hot is converting to hip hop. And he's been there ever since. And he's been the producer of like Angie Martinez's show. And he's been somebody who on-air talent has often name-checked. And from all accounts that I've heard, he genuinely is one of the most well-liked people at Hot 97. Like, everybody I know who knows him is like, yo, dude, so genuine. He's really warm. Like, he's good people. I have never heard anything bad about this guy until this. So obviously now there's been an uproar because it's like, how does this dude invade hip-hop culture on this level and just like rock there for 25 years? And at first there was a whole outcry, and this is kind of like what me and Karin talked about the other week. People were like, you know, calling out Angie and Flex and Ebro, who didn't even start it hot until a decade later, and all of a sudden, like, you directing your anger at Black on-air talent. Like,
that ain't got nothing to do with this.
Yeah, like, granted, Ebro was at one point also a programming executive. The nigga ain't HR, you know what I'm saying? But like, you directed shit at on-air talent. Like, they
Ebro Darden's name ain't at the bottom of nobody's checks.
Like, they had to know. And I'm like, so it would be like saying that 5 years from now, if the guy who filmed Ahmaud Arbery getting shot, not even the one who shot him, if the guy who filmed Ahmaud Arbery getting shot walked into your place of business, you would know that's who he is. That it literally is that equivalent. And I don't think any of us can say that we would know that. It's the same. So, but then everybody was like, but Yusef Hawkins' case was all over the place. Yes, but not his name wasn't even on the wiki page. It might be now, but Patty's name wasn't even on the Wikipedia page for the murder in a trial. Like, that's like out of 8 people arrested, he was like number 8, you know? So,
and also to add context, people have to forget this is the 80s. No, not only was radio and music,
this is the 90s, but no,
yeah, 80s, late 80s, 90s. You got to remember that music, media, period, was very regionalized back then. And like how you was mentioning this Yusef Hawkins, like, I'm from the Midwest. I knew about the Central Park case. I didn't know about this. But right. To give this a more national feel, this is kind of like, if you're from the Deep South and you're Black, this was kind of similar to like the Atlanta Child Murders.
Right. This, and how other people remember, didn't know about that.
How that affected to that region, that's for a whole generation of Black people in the Southeast.
Right.
That changed their life. And this is what affected people in the Northeast. Right. Around New York and the metropolitan area with them, because back then people forget everything was regionalized.
Right. That's a good point. That's a good point, Karin. So, Waz, how old were you when Yusef was killed?
So I was only 2 years old, right? Okay. So I was a kid when this happened, literally a baby, barely off of the Similac.
When did you learn about it that you remember?
So this is the thing. I never learned about it. But
really?
As somebody who grew up in New York, mm-hmm. neighborhoods like Bensonhurst and Howard Beach are euphemisms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people say those neighborhoods in a way to express, like, it's some different shit going on over there.
Right. Like,
that
don't
shit
go
that
there
y'all
by
doing
yourself.
In Crown Heights and East Flatbush and all of that, that's cool. But don't ever try to take it over there. Because bad things may happen to you over there. So Bensonhurst was always one of those neighborhoods that you know, had a connection to some sort of dark energy of New York, right? It's just one of those things when you grow up in New York, you instinctively know, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's certain places where people don't want you around.
Yeah.
And those people are white.
Yeah.
You know, those people are, and you know, another thing that a lot of people don't understand about New York, because it's seen as this liberal bastion of the world, the fact of the matter is, native white New Yorkers are not that.
At all.
They are not that. They are not the artsy, fartsy, foofy people that love going to the MoMA.
And a lot of the white New York immigrants, like the native white New Yorkers, some of the white New York immigrants, but like, for example, I will never go to Staten Island ever in my life unless somebody...
What?
Staten Island voted for Trump. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not... There's no way.
Well, yeah. I like to tell people this stat all the time, right? When the cops killed, man, I'm drawing a blank on I can't breathe homie's name.
Eric Garner.
The cops killed Eric Garner, they did a poll of New York City residents. New York City, 65% of New York City people said, we disapprove of how the cops handled that. That was fucked up. That was whack.
Right.
They did a poll of Staten Island where it happened, and 65% of people said no, the cops did their job.
Right.
So there's a certain, like, I don't know what you call it, like disconnect when you live in New York. It's when you grow up in New York as a black person, you understand that, it's this, this is this bastion of culture, but white people don't like you.
They I used to tell people that New York is low-key more racist than the South, only because, at least when I was growing up, there weren't a lot of immigrants like that in the South. Now there are more immigrant communities in the South. But in the South, like, if you weren't black or white, when I was growing up, if you weren't black or white, you had to choose a side. Like, you had to choose which kids you were going to hang with. If you had to check a race, it was like black, white, other. But you couldn't just exist in other. You had to choose where you're going to hang out with the white kids or the black kids. And up here, it was like Puerto Ricans didn't fuck with Dominicans. You know, like even, you know, every culture is sub-segregated. You know, West Indians don't fuck with American blacks. You know, Africans don't fuck with American blacks. These don't fuck with each other. And then like the Asian people who own the corner stores don't fuck with the black people. So we've seen this illustrated, like Do the Right Thing again, considering that Spike dropped it in 89, but shot it in 88. And considering the year we had in 89, it's like, it's a prophetic film, literally. Like
100%. Every Spike Lee film is a prophetic film. Even the bad ones, you could go back and watch it now and be like, ah, shit, that just happened last week.
But it also illustrates all those dichotomies. White gentrified, it was the beginning of gentrified Brooklyn. So the relationship with white gentrified is the relationship with the corner store owners, the relationship with the cops, the relationship with the Italian South kids. The reason I wanted you to come on tonight wasn't just because you're a native black man from New York, but you were one of the first people I saw like react to the news about Patty and actually being Pascal. And I believe like you said, Hot 97 needs to be ashamed, or Hot 97 needs to answer.
Somebody needs to be held accountable for this.
Right.
And the reason why it hurt me as somebody who, I promise you, for like the first 2 years of Power 105, I didn't listen. Just loyalty to Hot. I'm like, these new upstart whippersnappers, I'm not listening to this shit. I'm Hot. I'm Hot 97. This is what I do. You know what I'm saying? Like, these are my people, right? Like, the attachment that you have with Hot 97 growing up out here is just, it's hard to explain that shit. Like, your whole identity comes from the music and the culture that Hot 97 was a part of bringing directly into your life. Right. So this is an emotional attachment that I have to Hot. But then, you know, you just got to think about questions about who gets to be redeemed. Right. How do they get to be redeemed? Where do they find this redemption or seek this redemption? Why is it always us?
Right.
That's redeeming people. It's always us.
Well, and
always us.
We always have to forgive.
We always have to get over it.
But that's why, and I know why you're gonna have to leave us. I was gonna say, I don't think that's gonna happen here. Like, one of the things I was saying on Twitter, where people were like, you know, Flex had to know, or Angie had to know, that's her guy, and she went to high school in Bed-Stuy. And one of the things I was trying to make people understand is that there is no way you can convince me that Patty told anybody black who was 20 something years old, which Angie and Flex would have been in the 90s, that he was involved in Yousef's killing, because he would have got fucked up on site. Like, that's how real people took it. And then by the time he got to the place where he probably, or I'm not gonna say probably because I don't know, where maybe he did want to tell them, how do you, after you form relationships with these people, if you have a career, and this is not me caping for him, this was just me trying to figure out what might have been going through his head, still, when do you bring it up? And I've been talking to some people who used to work at Hot and or MS that owns the station. The thought is that there was somebody in the executive suite at the time who like knew family or knew him, or who kind of like did him a favor. But again, they weren't doing background checks back then, apparently, which I believe. I've had one criminal background check in my entire career in entertainment. But also, because his lesser charges were dismissed, there still really wouldn't have been anything to find, even if there had been a criminal background check. But apparently there was somebody who knew, you know, he had taken during those years, you're going to Baruch, whatever. And so I guess my real thing is, like, like I said earlier, I really need people to stop making this about Angie or
See,
Flex.
That's stupid to me, it's making about it about them. Angie and Flex. Like,
yeah, it's not about them.
No. It's somebody guys to roll them. In the C-suite. Yes.
Yeah.
I said, because I tweeted, I said, heads need to roll.
Right.
Because this is crazy. Yeah. This man was a part of a lynch mob, and you guys write checks on the backs, the creativity, the exploits of Black people.
Like one of
this
the most notorious
fucking Paula Abdul station.
Yeah, this is still one of the most it's still one of the most notorious race. Like it's hard to
shout
believe
out to Paula Abdul, though.
But it's but it is still one of the most notorious racial incidents, or I don't know if that's the a soft word for it, but it's one of the most notorious, not saying it's the biggest, but it's one of the most notorious in like the city's history. Like that's how big this is. So it's not even just like, again, that's what I was trying to explain to people. People were like, well, Angie and Flex might protect them for a check or to cover themselves. I'm like, in 95 when he was just a producer and like, no. He could have easily been replaced. What it protecting what for? No. What he's not. He ain't even talent.
They didn't know. And like you said at the top of everything, I too talked to somebody who used to work at Hot, a good friend of mine, and she basically was like, he was the most nicest, one of the most charismatic cats that was over there. Like he was one of the people that you liked over there. And
I think might have been his own way to try to redeem himself.
Who
like
knows?
Just vowed to live a good
but
life.
My shit is this: Patty Duke, you can go work at a country station.
Yeah, he's not.
Feed your. I'm not saying you should never be able to feed your family for the rest of your life, but you don't have to get checks in hip hop.
Right.
We don't need to be the ones supporting you. Not, and I don't care how young you were, all of that shit. I don't give a fuck. It should be on us.
He was 19. I might have been able to.
Yes, he was a grown ass man.
I might have been able to lower look at it like 16. Like he was 19. That's old enough to even if you're doing dumb shit.
You can vote. You can vote and fight for your country at 19.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that at this point, there might even have been people who knew Patty as an adult who may have been willing to talk through this and forgive him. But now, what I'm not gonna say what's bigger, but the additional problem is the deception for 25 years, right? Basically, you've basically been
hiding in plain sight
identity for 25 years, right? Even though you weren't, even though you didn't get convicted of manslaughter, even though you didn't, like, it wasn't difficult for him. Somebody was like, he went through a lot of care to hide his identity. No, the fuck he didn't. He just didn't bring it up. Or if that conversation came up, and this is what Ebro said, they talked about it once, and he said he got caught up in it, but that he didn't have anything to do with it. I don't know what that means, but Ebro says he didn't question it. And that's what I was telling somebody else. They were like, nobody ever asked him when they knew he was from Bensonhurst. I was like, they might have asked him, like, where were you, when, or did you know anybody who? But nobody's going to be like, yo, were you in the lynch mob? Because nobody's going to think that your ass sitting here in Hot 97.
And and that's another thing. People who never lived in New York, it's hard for them to understand, too, about what I call ethnic native white New Yorkers is how hip-hop-ized they are.
Right.
Like, even the cats in Bensonhurst listen to Jim Jones more times than I do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so there's this, like, dual relationship. It's like these dudes are, like, hyper wiggerized, you know, while also being like racist. It's
right.
Current, I'm serious. It's a phenomenon in New York. Like that equivalent white dude doesn't really exist in LA, which is the only other place that I've lived. There is the white guy who calls his friends the N-word, like amongst his white friends.
Right.
They call each other the N-word. They wear Yankee hats. They wear ACG boots. They do the whole thing, the whole hip hop thing, and a racist.
It's
crazy.
Look. To add a lighter note on this, the funniest thing about this whole conversation to me, as a non-New Yorker and a person that is not a fan of anything New York or New York culture, is that only a New Yorker would get mad at having another huge ass black rap and hip hop station to be like,
I was tight.
city in this country, a black person would be like, oh shit, we get another station? Hell yeah. But only in New York.
We'd be like,
nah, B, fuck that shit, yo.
It was like McDonald's and Burger King. We were like, the fuck we need it for? Yeah.
I ate fries at both of them, okay? It's like, one had a better shake, you know, one had better apple pies. But I was eating at both of them. I wouldn't boycott Burger King because they nuggets went as far as McDonald's. Like, that makes no sense.
It was very special to boycott Power. He was also of a certain age where I think that made sense when Power launched. So I get it.
It seemed like some bullshit. Because it's like, and the thing is, they poached it was a bunch of hot rejects. Remember they started with Ed Lover and they poached hot people, and I was like, what is this?
But this is what I'm talking about. Like, I remember when that started in the dueling radio shows. As if someone outside of New York, I remember like New Yorkers talk like, nah, fuck them, they took so and so, they whack, they cut it hot. And I'm like, I'm like, y'all mad at niggas for taking a job? Like, this makes no sense.
It was the brand was strong. Hot was New York hip hop. That's the thing. Hot was New York hip hop. So, okay, I'm getting the signal that we've gone way over time, and I know Waj, you have to go. So I'm sure we're gonna come back to this because the other thing is, so Ed Lover has made like a brief statement. Ebro been talking about this shit nonstop, but whatever. Flex hasn't, Angie hasn't, Patty himself hasn't. MS made like a very brief statement, Hot did rather. Patty has to make a statement at some point. He owes it to hip hop. It's not going to fix anything, but he can't not. And I feel like he really should have been, like he had to know. Maybe he thought he wouldn't be in the doc because he got off with a misdemeanor on probation, but
man, he made the doc that boy on tape giving a statement.
Like the nigga looked like a person.
You know that 50 meme where 50 goes, where he goes from Power, he up, that nigga guilty as fuck.
Yeah.
Whatever he said, he did that shit.
Yeah.
When I'm watching the doc and I'm watching him talk, I'm like, yo, son, you was really on this.
Yeah.
You was really a part of this entire ordeal, bro.
And the thing, so people wonder, like, well, how did people know it was him now if they didn't know it was him then? Because now, in retrospect, he looks the exact same. So none of us saw, nobody saw that footage back then. He wasn't on the news back then because he wasn't one of the main kids in the trial.
When you go on your Instagram and you stare at people for hours, like, that's not how it was. Like, it's not the same. Seeing a cat from one picture in a newspaper one time in your life and then expecting 3 years later, you're going to be like, oh, that's the home. No, it's not the same. Like, I don't want to see terrible things happen to Angie and Flex, because in many ways, these are some of my heroes.
Right.
You know, like, I don't want to see something bad happen to them.
I also think we collectively, we need to learn who to hold responsible and to whom to direct our outrage. And plot twist, when we're talking about something that a company did, it's almost never the black person. And it's almost never the talent, for sure. You know, so it's like, they cash their checks there just like everybody else. And, you know, Angie and Flex are both very comfortable, but neither one of them in the 90s, like, it wasn't going to be big enough to cover this shit up. Like, that, nah. All right, I want to talk about this longer, but I know we got to wrap. But, Waz, thank you so much for being with us. And you are welcome back here anytime. Our door is open.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. You know I love talking to you guys.
Wait, yes. Waz, I just want to know, do you listen to 105.1 now?
No. I fuck with the Breakfast Club. Like, Clue again, another legend, somebody who my whole childhood existence, I'm listening to these things. Like, these are people I have an immense amount of respect for. But, like, at first, trust me, teenager me was like, this some old bullshit.
Right. It took hot.
As ludicrous as that sounds. Thank you guys for having me, man. Appreciate you guys.
You're so welcome. All right, everybody, we thank you, first of all, for listening, for watching. In this case, you could be listening to or watching anything in the world, and you're here with us. Karin, anything that you want to say to the people on our way out?
Oh, Cognac for Kamala. I may destroy you finale. That season was beautiful. I've never seen
it. Oh, yeah, shout out. We're gonna talk about them more at length next week.
I just wanted to say shortly that show ate my face off every Monday night.
Oh, my God. That's just such a phenomenal show.
And lastly, and as always, people of America and the world, citizens, stop giving your hard-earned money to that white man.
Or his wife.
Or his wife.
We thank y'all. We'll see y'all next week.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.